You choose your home and car for a reason. They were the right fit for you. So why not make sure your insurance is the right fit too? Here's the deal. At State Farm, you can combine home and auto and save an average of $889. That's right. To combine and save, call State Farm agent Tony Hoagland. He's at 763-421-4900. Or check out the website at ChamplinInsurance.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of Worst Seats in the House with Michael Russo. I'm Anthony LaPanta. We actually come your way this week from the Worst Seats in the House. We do the podcast from our broadcast booth at Xcel Energy Center before the Wild do battle with the Colorado Avalanche in a key two-game set. We'll get to that. But first, we always have to thank our sponsors. Our show is not possible without their support. Profile by Sanford. Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Kinetico water treatments. Kowalski's, Chris Lindahl Real Estate, Minnesota Propane, and Bosch Law Firm. Huge two-game series between the Wild and the Avalanche in St. Paul. Fans will be in the building. There's so much going on in this two-game set, but it starts out with the battle on the ice. This is a series that I think is critical for Minnesota because it might not matter for whether they make the playoffs, might not matter for who they face in the playoffs, but they've lost 4 out of 6 against this club, and the two in Denver were one-sided the wrong way. I think this series is very important to show that it's going to be a different story the next time these teams meet.
I completely agree with you. I mean, just from a psyche standpoint, because they're done in Denver this year, right? They have no more games in Denver, so that's also where they've really played badly. Here in St. Paul, they've played much better against the Avalanche, but you know, you also don't want to get to a point where you start looking at the standings and being like, well, how do you position yourself not to play Colorado in the first round? I was thinking that the other day. Like, you know, you want to keep yourself in that second or third spot, essentially, because I really do think that Colorado is going to win this division. And so if you do that and you start thinking, well, we got to play Arizona, we got to play St. Louis, we got to play Vegas, it's just going to be a losing proposition. So they've got to come out tonight, and they were broken last time they played them. They have, you know, those two games, if you remember, before they went to Colorado, they were at least victorious, maybe not playing their best hockey, but they went there, you know, feeling great about their game, and then they get sort of broken in half, dominated for 120 minutes, and it's taken them a while to get their game back, so you don't want it to be broken again here in this two-game set.
And it's still not a team that's operating at full strength. I mean, in this first game of the two games, still no Zach Parise, no Marcus Foligno, no Matt Zuccarello. There's some guys that are beat up. Remember when they went to Denver, it was the tail end of a busy, travel-heavy schedule for Minnesota. Well, the Avs had played 9 games in a row at home and basically been home for 3.5 weeks. They were healthy with just getting all of their guys back. It was kind of a perfect storm for Minnesota to run into trouble there. And even though it's not ideal here, they are coming off of maybe their two most impressive wins of the season, beating Vegas in back-to-back games in Las Vegas.
Yeah, correct. And they got back to their style. Actually, you know, I think Dean Evason did a really good job explaining his line changes before the game the other night. And, you know, he started to, I mean, really those line changes, I know this is going to, you know, might make some people roll their eyes, but those line changes were in a lot of ways designed to make sure you got Fiala, Kaprizov, and Zuccarello on 3 separate lines because they started to essentially get a little too cute, started to try to play catch with each other and playing east-west. And so now they get back to a north-south game. You put them with sort of two forecheckers on each line. Greenway, Arisonek, and Kaprizov look absolutely great together right now. And they've got to continue that. But the games in Vegas, they got back to playing that grinding style, especially the last game. You know, the first game, there were too many odd man rushes. Last game, they managed the puck really well. And you better do that in these two games against Colorado, or MacKinnon and Rantanen and Landeskog will light you up. And Donskoy suddenly.
Well, and remember that, you know, I mean, we've talked so much this season about the Wild's inability to score on the power play. Mm-hmm. They got power play goals in both of those games in Vegas that were game changers. And it's 4 times in the last 7 games. They've won a one-goal game in which they scored a power play goal. And we're going to talk about that in our show open tonight on the broadcast, is that they're never going to get the number to a percentage where you're going to be talking about the power play as an elite or even an upper half power play. They're just not, with how deep into the season they are and how slowly they started. But the bottom line is the power play has been there when they've needed it lately, and that's what's going to be important from here to the finish. They had a power play goal in each of those two games against the Ducks. In fact, the first game, remember, they couldn't even complete a pass that night. All of a sudden had a power play where they had the puck for the full 2 minutes, didn't score, scored on the next one, changed the game. And now the two in Vegas. I mean, Spurgeon's power play goal gets him into the shootout the first night, and then Kaprizov's power play goal breaks the tie the second night. So it's in both cases, they needed the power play goal. They got it when they had to have it. That's the kind of production they're going to need from that unit going down the stretch.
Yeah, and I expect the power play to go on a tear now because they play a lot of home games coming up, and they got 3,000 fans that'll tell them when to shoot. And obviously, Wild players don't know when to shoot. So, obviously, a little tongue in cheek there. But, you know, I mean, look, Spurgeon, I thought that 4-on-3 the other night was outstanding. And Fiala, the last couple of power plays, just looks like he's really finding himself. You know, the one thing that I still think they need to go back to more traditional units. I just don't like Rask and Bonino on the power play. I mean, and I don't want to sit there and say, well, Greenway needs to be there because he's having this great year, because it just does seem like. You know, we've seen Greenway on the power play, and for some bizarre reason, when he gets on the power play, it's like the rest. He doesn't seem to perform well because he doesn't just do what he's essentially told, and that's stick in front of the net, but it seems to affect his other game. So I think they want to almost consciously keep him off the ice, and obviously you don't have Parisian Zuccarello, and so they don't have a lot of choices there. But, man, you know, if they're not going to win draws, Rask and Bonino, there's really no use for him out there.
Well, but that's why he went to the two of them, was because not only are they not winning draws, but did you notice in the San Jose series, the two losses against the Sharks, how many times the Wild got kicked out of the faceoff circle compared to San Jose?
Yeah.
San Jose, in the two games, did not have a draw taken by anybody other than their four centers.
Right.
The Wild had five players other than their four centers in each of the two games forced to take draws. I think the total was something like 19 draws that had to be taken by wingers for the Wild in that series. And so I think right now it's like, look, we got to make sure we have two centers on the ice because one of them is going to get kicked out. The other guy steps in and at least gives us a chance, because the first 30 seconds, every single power play, it feels like, are spent going back and retrieving the puck behind the net and then trying to re-enter the zone. And I agree with you. Neither one of them look like guys that should be on a top power play unit, but it's been better with those guys out there. And frankly, I like Spurgeon as the one defenseman on that four forward group. It gives them a right shot guy at the top. It allows Suter to play together with either Dumba or Brodin on the second power play unit, but in the two defensemen set. It's been working, so why not stick with it?
How about Luke Johnson's important shifts the last couple games? You know, big draws. He's out there in the final minute the other night. You know, I thought Nico Sturm had a really good response to Dean scratching him 2 games ago. He was initially supposed to be scratched last game, but Zuccarello wasn't able to play, so Sturm comes in there and winds up playing big shifts, especially on the penalty kill, and I thought responded well. He just had a funny interview where he basically, you know, said that he was the same guy, but, you know, he'd be lying to us if he said didn't bother him, and he comes out and he responded well. And so guys are starting to play well. Let's talk a little bit about the continued maturation of Joel Eriksson Ek and how important he's become on this team, Anthony. I mean, the other night, really, the last 2 games, he's elevated in the lineup, plays next to Greenway and Kaprizov, and he just looks like a different player. I think that's partially, obviously, getting to play with Kaprizov, but you just look at how relentless he is at times. You know, Cam Talbot 2 games ago tried to give him the hero of the game bucket, not because of the way he played for 59 minutes, but it was the first penalty kill where he bowled the puck all the way to the offensive zone and kept it there for, you know, ate up a bunch of clock. And he does that all the time. And you look at his game-winning goal the other night, Anthony. I mean, that is relentless. He ties up the center. He falls to the ice. He's brushing off clear pain on his face. I mean, you could see it. He stands up, and next thing you know, Greenway puts the puck on his stick, and he follows it while getting crushed to the ice. And this is what he's become. He's just so important to this roster, and even more so than I think anybody in this organization thought he was, to the point that, remember, at the early last season, Bill Guerin easily could have traded him and had potentially potential opportunities to move him. He doesn't move him. I bet he's thanking his lucky stars he didn't. And now this guy's looking at just a monster contract this offseason.
Well, there's no doubt of his value to this club. And we've looked at him for years and wondered if it was, could he be the next Mikko Koivu-type mm-hmm. player and be a maybe never a 30-goal guy, but be a 15, 18, 20-goal-per-season guy and just turn into a shutdown-type centerman. And I think he's become that, minus the face-off prowess that Koivu always brought. And he hasn't yet come anywhere close to approaching what Mikko brought offensively. He doesn't pass like Mikko did. He doesn't really even shoot the puck like Mikko did. But all of a sudden, you're looking at a guy that this year he's got 12 goals. And, you know, career high was 8 before that. And how about this? Eight in the third period. That Phil Kessel's the only player in the NHL that has more third period goals than him. And so, I mean, this is a guy that when there's no spot that seems too big for him, he doesn't ever seem to get fazed by things. He doesn't ever seem to get rattled by who he's playing against. We've joked about the way he seems to get under the skin of opposing players. And I think that's a big part of it, is that it just doesn't – he doesn't seem to even really ever understand what the situation is. You know, I mean, when you look at the look on his face, you're like, do you understand you're on the ice protecting a one-goal lead and you're playing against Nathan MacKinnon right now? And, I mean, he just kind of has that look like, well, the puck was in the corner. That's what I'm supposed to do. You know, I mean, which is great.
Oh, it's like I remember once I asked Brent Ferns, like, what are you thinking or something? He goes, I don't think out there.
Right.
Just play the game.
Well, when they switched him to forward, they said, what do you do when you go from defense to forward? I just turn my brain off.
Yeah.
I mean, but he's more of a cerebral player than that.
Yeah, Erickson-Eck is very smart.
The body language and the look on his face. Like, and you can almost see it in the guys, the opposing players around the net, when they're looking at him like, would you please react when I punch you in the face?
Exactly.
And he just doesn't.
Yeah, it goes to that story I wrote a couple years ago in Carolina when you got lost and your phone died.
I didn't get lost. I just went to Chapel Hill.
Yeah. And then all day, Margo was trying to find you through me. And I'm like, I don't know where the hell he is. I'm trying to write about Joel Erickson-Eck right now.
It was I wound up crashing a wedding in Chapel Hill. Totally accidentally, but
somebody out there has you in wedding photos, and I would love to see that.
Yeah, you know, it's... It was. It's. I wonder that sometimes because the only reason I walked up, I went in, is kind of a cool bar that was in this train car.
Uh huh.
And I seriously did go to Chapel Hill for the day. There's not a lot to do in Raleigh, so I went up there. I was bouncing around from bar to bar trying to find some live music, and I walk into this cool bar that was a railroad car. I think the bar might have been called the Depot. I walk in, it's kind of a cool vibe, you know, there's music playing and people dancing. I walk up to the bar to order a drink, and the guy says, yeah, and I get out my card. He said, no, it's all in the house. It's like, well, that was nice. I thought the guy was just buying me a drink. So the next, I order another one, and same thing, and all of a sudden I start to look around. I see this chalkboard sign, Sean and Shannon, congratulations or something. I was like, huh, well, turns out I'm at a wedding. But it was they weren't wearing tuxes. They were just wearing like shirt and tie. So it was a fun night. But anyway, so you wrote a story that
day. Yeah, but that was the story. So I wrote, I did the interviews in Tampa, and guys like Stalock, Parisi, Foligno, if I remember, were so funny in the story. If you haven't read the story, just go on Google and Google probably The Athletic and Joel Erickson-Eck, and it'll probably be the first story that pops up. But in the headline, something like what Joel Erickson-Eck does to make opposing players like lose their minds, but that really is what he is. And he's just, you know, he gets so many chances, and the difference this year is he's putting them in. I mean, you know, before, I mean, the degree of difficulty, it's like the easier the chance was, the more likely it was that he wasn't going to put it in. I mean, how many pucks by the goal line didn't he bury in the last couple of years? And even earlier this season, I mean, he should be at 20 goals with the amount of chances, but now he's just... What I just love about his game is his relentlessness. I mean, you know, that goal to me the other night was like the biggest eye opener for me of just how important he is for this team. It just off that draw, everything that he did, and that just that span of 4 or 5 seconds to score that goal, he's become so important to this team, and this is again why the Wild have to be careful going out and just acquiring big ticket players right now, because Eriksson Ek, Fiala, Kaprizov, these guys are going to get paid eventually. Eventually, Marco Rossi, Matt Boldy, all them need to be able to afford them, and that means you can't go out and get $10 million players and things like that. Look at John Warner already here, huh?
Well, yeah, this is a big day. It's a big game.
Yep.
It actually is a
John, by the way, John Warner is the audio guy for
he's
Anthony
our audio
Jr.
guy, and this is a longer day for them because so here's it's bizarro world calling hockey on TV in 2021. Normally when the Wild go on the road, we just come into our normal press box set where we do home games and watch the game on TV and call the games. But this past week, the high school hockey tournament's going on here in St. Paul. So their TV crew is in here to call the games, and we can't do the game with the action going on behind us. I mean, if all of a sudden we're calling a Wild game and you hear behind us whistles blowing or public address or music or whatever playing in the arena, it would have been bizarre. So we had to tear down our booth, which has been set up the whole season, bring it downstairs and do the games from the media dining room the last week, and let the Channel 45 crew come in so they could do the high school games. Now they had to tear it out. So our guys, for only really the second time this year, because they set it up at the beginning of the year, now they have to reset our entire booth today. So it's a longer day for them. But the point of the story that I think is interesting is it was so strange to be calling the game from down in the media dining room this past road trip.
Yeah, like that's where you usually get your bucket of fruit before
right.
the game.
And so you're just basically, yeah, I may as well have been in my basement calling. Yeah. I mean, at least when we're in our booth, the game is out in San Jose, but you know, you feel like you're in your normal setting. You're standing in the same spot, you know, you're facing the other direction, but at least it felt a little normal. It felt so strange to be down there calling the game, you know, basically in a closet. And then during intermissions, you could walk outside, wander through and watch the high school hockey tournament, you know, live. It was kind of one of the nice little benefits of being here, but it was such a strange feel, probably as weird as any game we've done this year, just because of what was happening around us.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to watch. By the way, spring is here. Time for spring cleaning and preparing for the warmer weather. I'm happy to share that my friends over at Aquarius Home Services are offering up $49 AC tune-ups. Yes, that's only $49. A trained technician will come to your home, complete an AC tune-up, and get you prepared for the warmer weather ahead. They treat your home like it's their own, from wearing shoe covers to cleaning up when they're done. They provide no surprise upfront pricing and guaranteed work. To schedule your $49 AC tune-up, visit Aquarius Home Services today at AquariusHomeServices.com. Again, AquariusHomeServices.com. And here's a word from Minnesota Propane.
Hey, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know, according to the Environmental Protection Agency Energy Star program, that propane is almost 3 times more efficient than grid electricity? We all care about our planet, so let's use energy efficiently to reduce our environmental footprint. You can heat your homes, your water, your cabins, your businesses with propane. The right energy right now. Propane, clean American energy. For more information, go to propane.com.
Back here, worst seats in the house. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta. We're watching the Colorado Avalanche on the ice. Bad news, everybody. Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon have made the trip. I like their practice jerseys. Those blues are sweet. You know what would be nice tonight, Anthony, is seeing actual shots on goal that are registered correctly.
That's true. That'll be fun to watch, and I'm always just amazed by how different the game looks when all the first couple shifts back to watching it live, and it as opposed to trying to see it on television. You get all of a sudden you're back to like, wow, the speed of this game and the skill level, the talent level is high, and it's so that I'm looking forward to. And
obviously, you know, I'm just kidding about the shots on goal. I'm just trying to rile up the Avs fans, and I'm sure listening to this podcast right now.
Remember, though, we had a conversation a couple shows ago about registering shot attempts. I talked to the game night stat guys here in St. Paul, and they said, you know what, one of the – they were defending. Because remember I said we watched a guy have 4 shot attempts on
they
a shift.
They brought this up to me,
did
too.
Did they really?
They were not happy.
And so he said –
We're not happy with you.
Right. Well, I always want to talk to him. I still disagree with what they said, because here's what their explanation was. I said, and I don't even remember, I don't think it was a home game that we were making fun of them. The Wild had been on the road. Kevin Fiala had a shift where he took 4 shot attempts. The period ended, he had 2 shot attempts for the entire night. And when a guy takes a shot attempt, it gets registered in the stats as either a shot on goal that was saved, a goal obviously, a pipe or crossbar, or the shot misses the net or gets blocked. Those are the options. And so, and I had said, it just doesn't make any sense. It has to be one of the 4. His explanation, so I just wanted to share it with our listeners, was that they have nothing in their system for when you take a shot that hits a teammate.
Right.
Which, to me, that's just a missed shot.
Yeah.
You took a shot, you missed
the
net.
I agree with you.
I mean, I don't care if it hit a teammate or hit the glass. The bottom line is it's a missed shot attempt. It was a shot attempt.
Yeah.
And so if you throw a puck toward the net, and let's say it hits your teammate screening the goalie and ricochets wide, that doesn't count as a shot attempt?
Doing it wrong, or the league needs to add that little category to their computer.
To me, that's just a missed shot. That's a shot attempt.
Yep. Well, the other night in Vegas, in the last couple seconds, if you remember, Vegas had a couple jam attempts at the side of the net, and I looked real quick, and they gave Talbot 1 save. It was 1 shot against, and then 2 sort of misses. And I was just thinking, like, if that was in Colorado, the guy would have gotten, like, 7 shots on goal like O'Connor did in the first couple minutes of that game. And, you know, it's still amazing to me. It's like I don't know if as fans are, like, intentionally being unsophisticated or how they misconstrued what I was saying a couple weeks ago. But this has no bias against the Colorado Avalanche. First of all, they're NHL off-ice officials. My only point was when Talbot dislocated his shoulder making that save, if that's what they're considering a shot on goal, then the league needs to look at how those off-ice officials are doing their job to try to get it more uniform with every other arena in the league. That's the only point. But somehow, as fans, and Adrian Dater thought that I was taking shots at the Avs and also excusing the way that the Wild were dominated for 120 minutes, which is a story for another day. Let's talk a little bit about Cam Talbot. That game, he made 50 saves, probably 42 real saves.
Wes Walls, who did the game with me that night, went back and watched the first period. And remember the first period, if I remember, they were 25 to 6 or 25 to 8.
It was 25
like
to, yeah, something. I watched it again too, and I found 20 real shots.
That's exactly what he came back with. He told me he had the shots at 20 for Colorado instead of 25, which is still a lot of shots.
Right. Yeah.
But
exactly.
If you take away 5 each period, 55 becomes 40, and it sounds a lot different.
And it's especially critical when everybody's just going on and on and on about how they have a plus 200 something shot differential over everybody else in the league, you know. And by the way, there is a vast discrepancy between when they're home and away. So that's the only point. So hopefully Avs fans somehow get it through their heads right now, what I'm trying to say. Cam Talbot, 7-1-1 in his last 9. 950 save percentage. Mea culpa for me. A couple of podcasts ago, I think you and I had a slight disagreement on how I thought the Kakanen was, you know, really good at, you know, swallowing pucks and things like that. And you were saying that you thought Talbot was better and all that. And we've seen that the last couple of games. I mean, when this team needs a freeze, how many times does he do it? And I just was really impressed with the way that he played in Vegas, especially game 1, where I felt like the first 5 minutes he was fighting it a little bit, and then he just absolutely settled down and was such a rock there. For a goaltender, Anthony, I bet you in that game against Vegas, the first game, the Wild gave up 15 to 20 odd man rushes or breakaways. And if you think about the first 2 games in Vegas when Kakanen was in net earlier this season, it was the same story.
It was, and it's interesting because I've felt all year watching Talbot, and part of it's rebound control, part of it was just his ability to track pucks, where I've felt like Kakanen has looked like he's been swimming to find things at times. And yet, but he kept winning games. And so, I watched the game, and there's something in the eye test that tells me that Cam Talbot is the guy that has to be the guy. And I would get it. I would hear from fans on Twitter all the time, like, why do we keep referring to Talbot as our number one? And that was insane. I finally just stopped replying because I was like, look, I can see the numbers too, and the stats say that Kakkonen's won 9 games in a row, and that Kakkonen's goals against is lower, his save percentage is lower. We talked about it on a previous show about the fact that it just also felt like he was the beneficiary of being in goal on a couple nights where it was a, you know, an eye opener the previous game that got a team back to the attention to detail. And, you know, I think there was something to that. But I've just felt all year like Talbot looked like the guy that you need in net. And now that's started to show. And yeah. Kakkonen has been great. And as a backup goaltender, you can't ask for anything more than what he's given you. But if this team is going to go anywhere, it's going to be riding Cam Talbot in goal, not Kaapo Kakkonen, at least at this point.
You know what's funny? A guy just tweeted me right as you said this, 31 seconds ago. It was funny how things change. March 6th, Minnesota Wild fan, and then he quotes him, Talbot's terrible. Kakkonen should start every game. Talbot should be benched. April 5th, quote unquote, oh my God, Talbot is amazing. So glad we had him steal games for us. Who do we protect in expansion? And it is kind of funny because, you know, a month ago we were all like, oh, well, obviously they're going to protect Kakkonen and expose Talbot. Now it's suddenly like the thought of them losing Talbot. Can you imagine if they lost Talbot?
Right. So yeah, it brings up an interesting point. I don't really like to spend a ton of time
on expansion,
guessing on expansion, because
especially at this point,
there's so many things that could change that we don't know about. There's also, you'd have to do such extensive research into what other teams are likely to expose before you could make a legitimate guess to if what Seattle might be thinking. I mean, I haven't looked at it to see, well, what other goaltenders are out there and what are their contracts. I mean, but the question was brought up, and again, we refer to Vinny, my son Vinny, every once in a while on the show, but he and I talk a lot right now about Wild hockey when we're around the house, and he just asked me the other night about, would you expose Kakkonen or Talbot? And to me, I've felt like if all things are equal, right now, Kakkonen is the younger goaltender with the potentially longer NHL career ahead of him, and it makes it a difficult. Mm-hmm. It would be difficult to expose him. But I did turn to him the other night and I said, unless you were looking at your roster going into 21-22 and saying, we are a legitimate Stanley Cup contender right now, that would be the one spot where you'd say, you know what? If we think we legitimately have a chance to win it, if I'm speaking as Bill Guerin now, I think I have a chance to win this year, and I want Cam Talbot to be the goaltender to do that, that might change your opinion.
Yeah.
It would change mine.
Yeah. I think the big thing here, it'll be interesting. Like, I don't know deep down what they truly still believe about Kakkonen. I think it's interesting that Freddie Shabbat, who knows Kakkonen well, is the one that has gone back and back and back and back and back with Talbot. So has their opinion changed? That do they, if they think that he is a future number one Kakkonen, then it's obviously a no-brainer. I think the one reason why that makes obviously the most sense at this point to protect Kakkonen is his age and the fact that right now they don't really have another goalie in the entire system. I mean, I don't think that people are looking at Hunter Jones as Barabo as the future or Philip Lindbergh.
Let's just say hypothetically they do think Kakkonen is a number one long term. Mm-hmm. So now you're the GM, and you think Kakkonen is a number one long term, but you think next year you've got a chance to make a deep run. And so you've got Talbot would be signed for 2 more seasons, mm-hmm. and if you were looking at the rest of your roster saying, we got everything else in place that we want. We think in the next 2 years we can make a couple runs. Is it worth saying years 3, 4, 5 when we could have Kakkonen here, we're going to watch him be playing goaltender in Seattle, but those 2 years that we can make runs, we've got the guy we prefer?
I still probably go with the asset.
Would you really?
Preservation and probably protect. I think that it's more of a likelihood of Seattle taking Kakkonen than Talbot. And I just think that because of his age and contract.
Right.
So to me, I think
but
that you take
they're not going to be
shot.
A contender in two years, where at least we don't think they will,
which is
where
why
Minnesota
I think
might
that,
be.
Yeah, which is why I think that if you protect Kakinen and expose Talbot, there's less of a chance of them taking Talbot than if you protect Talbot. So I guess my point is that if you protect Kakinen, now you're at least hoping that you have a better likelihood that both are coming back. Where if you protect Talbot, there's a very good chance that the expansion team would take the young goalie.
Yeah, maybe. But look at what Vegas did by taking Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yep.
Number one, he was their marquee name. Remember when they had their big expansion? Here's our expansion draft reveal, and he was the onstage guest, and everybody knew they were going to take him. But he was the one big name, legit NHL guy that they grabbed there, and solidified everything so that they could go through the growing pains that they were expecting to have.
No doubt.
It's a different situation for Seattle, no question. And their roster is going to look different. They're not going to be getting two players from a lot of these teams. But there is something to be said for getting a proven, established NHL goaltender to try to help solidify things early.
I will preface this. So we're also having this discussion without looking at any expansion sheets. Like, I will say this, because there are a lot of people that tell me that even if Talbot was exposed, it's still unlikely that they're going to take him, because they are going to have their run of potentially good goalies grabbing two or three in the expansion draft. So we're looking at it like, oh man, what if they lose Talbot? But Seattle apparently is going to have their pick of some pretty good ones. So it'll be interesting.
But let's, just to go back to Talbot and his game, throughout the course of this season, I think there's only been two games where I've walked away from the rink saying I thought the other team's goalie was better. And one was when Talbot had a bad third period in Arizona, and it wasn't even totally his fault, but the team played terribly down there. And then the other was when Kakinen got lit up in Denver. I thought Grubauer outplayed him that night. Yep. Kakinen was off his game, a couple soft ones early, turned into a 6-0 game, but it wasn't really a 6-0 game in terms of the flow. But I've also thought there were only a few games where you legitimately looked at it and said, the goalie stole it for you. I just thought the goalies have done what they're supposed to do, which is what Minnesota has said for 5 years, is with their structure, the way they limit opposing chances, all they need is a goalie to make the saves they're supposed to make. I think in the last week, Talbot has stolen a couple games. The game here against St. Louis, when Minnesota got outshot 37-11. The game in Vegas the other night. The saves he made against Kolesar were unbelievable. And so now all of a sudden you got guys where Ryan Carter and I were talking this morning. There have been some games where it was this line carried you, that line carried you, your defense carried you. But what makes you able to sustain stretches where your first line disappears or your defensive core is shaky is when you got guys making saves in net. Yeah. And Talbot has been that, and he just never, ever, ever shows any frustration in goal, which I just think seeps through to this club.
Yeah, which brings me to my next point. By the way, he's the other thing about him, when you ask people, and obviously we're never in the locker room, is that he's in an absolutely impeccable shape. But do you think the other night when Dean, I don't know, do you listen to the postgame presser?
Yes. Sorry.
When Dean, unsolicited, when I asked about block shots, brought up the fact that that both their goalies don't have bad body language when somebody's in their shooting lane or he's screened, do you think he was directly talking about Dubnyk?
I do. I mean, and we saw it. And look, when Dubie came in here, he saved the day for Minnesota, and played his tail off every game, played every night, was the only reason they made the playoffs that year. A couple years later, he was outstanding. But the last couple of years, it was, you know, you'd see, it would be, and he had some bad luck, but so does every other goalie in the league. But there would be so many plays where, okay, the puck deflected off somebody, but the way Dubie would react, it's like, oh my, I'm the only goalie in the league that ever has a puck go in off somebody's ass. And Talbot just never, ever seems to get rattled by that. And even the other night, the goal in Vegas, I mean, both games actually, Vegas's goals were like, one of them deflected, another one like took a goofy carom out of the corner. And I mean, he just, all right, well, they got one. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get two. Where with Dubie, it was, one would turn into three so fast that you wouldn't know what hit you. And you'd see him waving his arms and, you know, rolling his eyes. And now it's, you never see anything. And I just think the players seem to thrive with that behind them.
Yeah, and that definitely affects the players. So, I mean, they see it. It bothers them, you know. And I don't know. It just felt like Dean was, you know, was going that route.
I thought so too. Hey, we're just coming off of Easter weekend, and we had a great Easter feast at our house. It was awesome. I haven't made ham in a long time, but we decided let's go the, you know, somewhat traditional Easter ham. And anytime I'm making a big meal, I get the ingredients at Kowalski's, and that was the case again. We just make sure that, you know, you always start with the best ingredients. But boy, we had a lot of fun. Had a great day with family, and ham, sweet potatoes, grilled mangoes, which are a couple of our favorites, and a Mediterranean salad. It was awesome. And just, you know, I always love to experiment, love to try it. We made this glaze for it that was kind of a mustard and balsamic and honey. It turned out to be great, and we really enjoyed it. But every time I'm making a great meal, starts with the best ingredients. So for that, I always hit Kowalski's.
Yep, and as everybody knows, Anthony's a cooking expert. I'm an expert on real estate, Anthony.
Right.
Is that a good segue?
Yeah, great segue.
Well, when I hear people talk about why they haven't put their home on the market yet, I hear two main reasons. They don't want tons of people walking around their home, or they don't know where to move to. If this sounds like you, then I have two words of advice, guaranteed offer. My friend Chris Lindahl tells me that the real estate market is on the move. The weather's warming up, interest rates are changing, competition is growing, and people are flooding to Chris Lindahl Real Estate's Guaranteed Offer program. Why? Because it knocks down those two big barriers to selling. When you get a guaranteed offer, you get full market value for your home without doing a single showing. Buyers won't visit your home, and you can take up to 3 months to close, so you have plenty of time to find your new home. Guaranteed Offer is about control, convenience, and confidence. It's so easy, you'll never go back to the old way of selling. Call Chris Lindahl Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD, or go to chrislindahl.com to request a no-obligation guaranteed offer on your home. That's chrislindahl.com. It's Chris with a K, by the way. Lindahl, L-I-N-D-A-H-L, but everybody knows because he's got billboards everywhere. Somebody had a funny tweet to us, and let me, of course, find it. But it was basically, says, do you have, as a seasoned, there are funny stories where seasoned players make rookie mistakes packing for a road trip or nearly missing a flight. He wants to know about broadcasters and writers. A seasoned player would have been Mark Parrish. His rookie year, we were up in Ottawa. I've told this story before with Mark on the podcast, probably. But we're in Ottawa. It's the Panthers are playing Ottawa, Montreal. It's the day after the game. They're practicing at the, not the Corral Center, which is whatever it's called now, Scotiabank.
Canadian Tire.
They've changed it 50 times. They're practicing right downtown at the Ottawa Civic Center where the 67s play. Well, the next morning, Brett Hedekin the day before got hurt, so he set his alarm to go early to see a doctor in Ottawa. And Mark oversleeps, misses the bus, takes a cab from downtown Weston to the Corral Center for practice. You know how far that is, right?
Yeah, it's a 25-minute, half-hour drive.
Well, he doesn't know they're practicing
down the
5
street.
Minutes from the Weston. He misses practice. He has to now, after spending probably $60-70 to practice in a cab, he has to now wait for a cab to come back to Kanata's Arena. Takes it to the Ottawa Civic Center, walks in as Terry Murray is getting off the ice. He gets scratched the next night in Montreal. That's the big one. But in terms of reporters, I mean, have you had some situations? My favorite one's Chad Graff still.
Yeah.
Chad sets his alarm. He and I are flying. This is when he's at the Pioneer Press. Chad, he's our Athletic Vikings writer now. I'm sitting on seat 1C. Chad, of course, is going to be in steerage, so I usually get to watch him go by me. And I notice that Chad has not come on the plane yet, and we're getting ready to close the door, and all of a sudden my phone rings, and it's Chad, and he's in a panic, and he's like, is the plane on time? I'm like, yeah, they're about to close the door. He goes, God darn it. He goes, I set my alarm for the time the plane was supposed to leave, not when I was supposed to get up.
So. Well, we've had a few. I had one with Chad where we were leaving Napa, and we were driving into San Francisco to catch a flight to rejoin the Wild, wherever I think they were going to. We were flying from San Fran to down to LA, maybe, I think, and we had asked the guy the night before how long it took to get to the San Francisco airport, and he had given us the time, like, let's say he said 90 minutes, I don't remember. But bottom line is, he meant right then, not the next morning when there was traffic. So we start driving, and all of a sudden we're like, holy cow, we are not going to make this. And Chad ended up driving through a toll booth, like express lane thing where, that you could only go through if you had a whatever their freeway pass is, and later got a ticket for it. But bottom line is, we got there. The plane got delayed by like 20 minutes, so we made the flight and everything worked out all right. But there was a moment where we were like, we are not going to make that. We're sitting at a toll booth line. Our plane is supposed to be leaving in 4 minutes, but... But here's for me,
you want to hear another great Chad Grass story?
Well, he flew into the wrong airport one time.
Well, that was a good one.
Yep.
We should just tell Chad Grass story. Remember the one in Toronto where he and I share a cab to the airport for a 6 a.m. flight through Atlanta to go to Tampa? And we have dinner plans that night where I think we were just going to Jackson's because you had to like coach your football game at Jackson's. That, definitely. Yep. This is the story. Okay. So you were going to coach your Totino Grace game off the internet.
Yeah. I was watching the stream.
You were going to watch the stream.
I had two playoff games on the pier at Jackson's over the years. That one was, the story you're telling was a prep bowl against Eden Prairie.
Yes.
And we were playing and the Wild were off that night. But
And so you lost and I videotaped you losing and I sent it to your wife.
Yeah. I'm sure she loved that.
Yeah. But the Chad Grass story. So he and I are in a cab. We share it to the airport. Now, again, my status is a little more elite than Chad. So, like, when we get to the airport, we always would venture off, and I'd go on the priority line because that's the type of person I am, and I'd leave Chad to go back, you know, behind, like, 50 people in a regular line. So then we check in for our flights. Now we go to customs. The customs is a madhouse, Anthony. Madhouse. Well, Chad and I, like a year before, drove together to War Road to get our Nexus cards. So we both can skip customs. I figured Chad knew this since he and I drove to War Road.
You guys drove to War Road, and 2 weeks later, I went to Brooklyn Park to get
mine. Yeah, I know. That bothered me. So I see this madhouse. I immediately realize, because I've read the material, that when you have a Nexus card, that also doubles as global entry to get back to the U.S. So I skip the line, and I go to these kiosks, and I skip, like, honestly, I'm not kidding you. It had to be 500 people in line at 6 a.m. at, like, 4:40 a.m., right? And so I skip the line. I go through customs. I get to the gate. I go to Starbucks. I get on the plane. Again, I'm on seat 1C. I'm waiting for Chad. No Chad. I text him as the door's closing. Where the fuck are you? And I should probably let Brandon know that at 41 minutes, I cursed.
where the fuck are you?
I text him, like, where are you? He goes, I'm still in customs. I'm like, why didn't you skip the line? He goes, we could do that. I'm like, yes, you idiot, we could do that. He missed his flight, and because I think it was over, when would the prep bowl be? Around Thanksgiving,
November,
right?
Around
Thanksgiving. Yep. That one mistake of not knowing go through customs, he landed in Tampa, remember, at midnight. Remember he missed the entire day traveling from Toronto?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So here, I've got one that goes back to, this was 1999. I was doing radio for the Minnesota Twins, and I think Margo's told you the story before. But so I have AJ and Vinny. AJ is 4, and Vinny is 3, and Margo is 8 and a half months pregnant with Gianni. And the...
Interrupting your customs break here?
Right. Yeah. Union break. All right.
Union break.
So we'll get
customs,
to. So anyway, Margo's 8 and a half months pregnant. It's June, and it's 95 degrees in Minnesota. The Twins were playing in Milwaukee, and at that summer, there were a couple times they flew the day of the game, and this was one of them. We flew in the morning to Milwaukee to play that night. We had another time we did it to go to Chicago. So we're driving to the charter terminal to catch the Twins flight to Milwaukee, and we're running late, and I'm flying down there, and we are on fumes in my old Toyota 4Runner. We rolled into the charter terminal. So I make the flight, I run through, and I get on the plane, and I mean, I made it by, let's say, 10 minutes before we were going to leave, but left Margo, 8 and a half months pregnant, 95 degrees, with a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old in her car and an empty tank of gas.
Yeah.
And nothing I could do. I mean, here goes the plane. We're heading for Milwaukee. And, you know, so I I'm in the air. I can't get a hold of her while I'm in the air. I'm wondering, like, why? Geez, I hope she made it. I hope she.
The kid's okay.
So, bottom line is, I think it was a police officer that drove her to a gas station to get a can
that,
of
yeah,
gas.
Yeah, I remember she and that then, holiday.
And then drove back yeah. and fill up
that,
the
that
truck.
Holiday right at the corner yeah. there by.
And so then I land in Milwaukee. I check into our first class hotel in Milwaukee and. Call home and hey Margo, how did it work getting gas to get out of the airport parking lot? So that's the closest I've come to missing a flight there. Actually, I missed a flight coming home from Sioux Falls because the flights had all gotten delayed because there were storms in the Twin Cities, and I went and sat on a chair a couple gates down. There's only four gates I think in the Sioux Falls airport. Put in my earbuds and I'm watching a movie on my iPad. And all of a sudden, while I'm watching the movie, they made an announcement that they had decided to let our flight go because they had originally told us we're not leaving. The flight was supposed to be at 6. They said we are not going to leave before 8 o'clock. So I went to watch a movie. Well, turns I come back at a little before 8 and I said, yeah, what's the status with the flight? Oh, it left an hour ago. It's like, what? So they said, we announced it. We announced it and you didn't. I was like, well, you guys all like made this big announcement. It's not going to leave before 8 o'clock. So don't come and ask us any more questions. So I'm only 84 feet down the thing. There's only four gates in the airport, but I was watching a movie. I didn't hear the announcement. So I missed my flight. So I had to rent a car and drive all the way home from Sioux Falls that night.
By the way, it's been a year since we began battling the global pandemic. It's taken a toll on all of us. Last May 1st, I joined Profile by Sanford, and I can't convey how much it's worked for me. I've reached my goal weight, but instead of even starting maintenance, I've decided to keep trucking along and see how much more I can lose. That's because I feel so much healthier physically, mentally, and emotionally. I'm more energetic and have a lot more confidence. If you're not feeling great or you simply need to drop a few pounds or a lot of pounds, get in contact with Profile by Sanford, and it can change your life. Their food is great. They have easy to follow nutrition and exercise plans that are customized for you, and you get personal coaching and support every step along the way. I encourage you to talk to Profile. It's working for me and it can work for you too. 6 convenient metro locations in the Twin Cities. Go to profileplan.com for a location nearest you and tell them that Russo sent you. And here's a word from Bosch Law Firm.
Hi everyone, attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you, from border to border and all over the great state of Minnesota, to ensure they're treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. Wage loss, medical bills, job insecurity, and the stress of trying to navigate a complicated work comp system on your own. You need someone in your corner who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. To make sure you're being paid all available work comp benefits for your injury, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm anytime. The call is always free and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300 or visit us at workcompexperts.com.
Let's talk a little bit more about this upcoming schedule, Anthony. 2 games against Colorado, then a bunch of games against St. Louis coming up, and this will probably tell a lot of us about how good this team could be down the stretch here.
Well, no doubt about that. I think the 2 games against Colorado are important, and I don't think Minnesota, they're not must wins or anything, but number one, they have to be competitive, and I think Minnesota, they got to win one of these 2 games, and if they do and you end up the season series where you went 3-5 against Colorado, that's okay. That is what happens. If you looked at most teams that win their divisions, you're going to be looking at a team that went 5-3 at worst against most teams in the division. In fact, right now Vegas is the only team that's beaten this Colorado team more than twice out of any of the teams in the West. Colorado's 3-2-1 against Vegas. Minnesota's beaten them twice. And, so I think there's no shame in losing a season series to the team that wins the division. And I think most people feel this is the best team in the division. But you have to be competitive here in your home building. I mean, there's nothing that says Minnesota can't win both of these games, but I think they got to win one of them at least. They both have to be competitive because you have to be able to look and say, if we bump into this team in the postseason, that we're right there with them and can battle with them. And the Wild have shown that they can, but that last series in Denver, I'm sure, has a little seed of doubt somewhere in the back of the mind of Wild fans and maybe even Wild players, and that's why I think these 2 are important.
Good question from the dog father. Anthony says, what player for each of you is the media triple threat? On ice production, quote, interview, guy who you'd want to go to dinner with. That's a good question.
That is a good question. I mean, for me right now, it would be Cam Talbot. And part of that is because I haven't had a chance to meet him yet. I've never met him face to face. I mean, because we haven't been allowed in the room. But I love listening to his interview sessions, and his performance on the ice has been second to none. And so because of all that, I guess maybe we'll go to dinner sometime and find out. I mean, in terms of the other guys like that I know a little bit better, the guys I'd prefer, I guess to me, it's not players necessarily. I'd rather go have dinner with some of the guys on the coaching staff. I'd rather go have dinner and a couple of beers with Billy Guerin.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Always good. There's no doubt about that with Billy. In terms on this team, probably like a Foligno or Ian Cole. I talked to him for an hour on the phone the other day. I talked to his parents for an hour and a half the other day. Just shooting the breeze, too, for this big feature that I'm writing probably for Wednesday. There's so many
good
anecdotes.
He's such a well-spoken guy.
I'm telling you, Anthony, there's so many great stories. Like his – I sent a screen capture of how long I was on the phone with his parents and sent it to Ian Cole, and I said, sorry. Because his parents just filled me up with stories of, like, when he was a kid and everything. So that'll be Stuart Tapper wants to know, who's the best local broadcasting teams in the NHL other than your own, Anthony?
If he's saying our own, I appreciate that. I think there are some good ones. I think a lot of them are the Canadian. I really like some of the Canadian crews. I think the guys in Toronto are good. I think especially, I think Gord Miller calls a good game, and when he and Ray Ferraro work together, yep. I think they're really good. I'm trying to think of some of the other local guys in the U.S. markets. I think some of the Eastern teams, I don't mind. I like the guys in Philly. Sam Rosen, I think, is just such a classic guy, and I think Joe Micheletti is one of the better analysts in the game. So I think those guys are good. Chicago is probably at the top. I love listening to Pat Foley, and of course Eddie Olczyk, I think, is one of the best analysts in the league. Those would probably be the ones that would jump out to me. But I watch a lot of local broadcasts. I prefer the local broadcast to the national feed sometimes, just because you get a better feel for what's really happening with their team. But it's those are my tops. I don't know. What do you think?
I it's funny because I listen to mostly radio when I'm like driving home.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of radio guys too.
I love listening to the San Jose radio guy, Dan. What's it?
Ruzanowski.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I like Kenny Albert and Dave Maloney. Maloney is so
he's
like
good.
I everybody knows I'm buddies with Kenny, but Dave Maloney is just.
I love the radio in the Canadian markets. Yep. I love Toronto's. It's just old school.
Yep.
Montreal, same thing. Those are, to me, they're right up there with the tops.
Yep, no doubt about it. Just a couple more questions, and then we'll wrap it up for this week's edition of Worst Seats in the House. Somebody asked me, this was one of my sources, execs that I used for the, was talking about a Glendening trade, and he mentioned Victor Ron Francis's, affinity for Victor Rask in Seattle, and that maybe the Wild should try to put Rask in a Glendening deal, because any deal that the Wild make have to pretty much be dollar for dollar. And this person asks about, could that solve our expansion problems? I just think that's one exec that I happen to use that brought that up. If Ron Francis's affinity, if he really has one, because he gave Victor Rask that original contract, if that still exists and he took Victor Rask over Susie, Dumba, Greenway, Foligno, whoever else, Talbot, then, Ron Francis should lose his job before it even starts. Any other things you want to get to here?
Well, the only thing I would say is just when we look at, you asked about this stretch of games for the Wild, and these two against Colorado start a stretch of 6 out of 8 at home, but following these games with the Avs, it's St. Louis. And 7 out of the last 18 are against the Blues, and I think that's an intriguing team. So when we just kind of look at the West in general, I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead of things, but I think it's fair to say Colorado, Vegas, and Minnesota are going to be in the postseason. I mean, it would take something major changing between here and the finish with the way these teams are going. I don't know anymore if St. Louis is the no-brainer to be the fourth
team.
They are
in a funk.
They're in a funk, and we've been talking about it on our broadcast for the last couple of weeks. They haven't played anybody.
Yeah.
So they're they had 17 of their last 21 games were going to be against Minnesota, Colorado, and Vegas. So, I mean, the fact that they were even – that they weren't sitting on top of the division, having played the lion's share of their schedule against the Sharks, the Coyotes, and the Kings – and the Ducks, I mean, that's crazy to me. So I think now they're starting to get exposed for what they are. However, exposed for what they are is with a caveat, because they do have 7 out of their final 18 against Minnesota. So if you're the team chasing, you can't ask for anything more than that, to just have a chance to settle it on the ice. They still have games left with both Colorado and Vegas too. So, but I... Are they the team that you think is going to end up in that fourth spot?
Or I don't know.
Do you think? San Jose was one that made me.
San Jose is the interesting one. Like, I think Arizona is just not good, and St. Louis looks to be in a funk. San Jose is the team that, who knew they'd be 3 points out at this spot?
But, and they, after the two games with Minnesota, had 7 in a row against the Ducks and Kings.
Yeah. And so they just beat up on those California teams.
So that, I think we'll know by the end of next week, maybe, if San Jose goes and takes 6 out of 7 against those two clubs, a team that I think looks terrible would have a chance to be the fourth team in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't – to me, that team does – they do nothing for me. I know they just beat Minnesota twice, but I just – that team they look as far from a playoff team as any team in the division, and yet – they might be ahead of St. Louis right now.
Yeah, they do. The one thing about them is they're fast, and they do have a lot of – if Carlson's going to play like the Carlson of yesteryear, then they're going to be pretty good. I mean, it's just – that's the thing. They do have game breakers on up and down that lineup that if they just can turn it on, I mean, they're getting great play from guys like Timo Meier and people like that this year. I did want to ask you one thing that, of course, by the way, somebody asked me about the Wild going after Sam Bennett. Somebody said it on NHL Network the other day. It's just not true. The Wild are not going after Sam Bennett right now. One thing, do you think that Bill Guerin should look to try to grab a center? Like, the one center I've been talking about recently is Luke Glendening, just because 65% faceoff circle guy.
Well, I think that right now the team has positioned itself well enough to where you have to be willing to listen to just about anything. And trades are going to be a difficult fit because of how tight the cap space is. But I do think if there's a fit there money-wise, yeah, I think this team has shown right now that they're worthy of – I still wouldn't do the traditional rental, wouldn't give up a major asset for a guy that's on an expiring contract – but if it was a minor, like a low-round pick for an expiring deal, or somebody that had term left that was going to help you beyond this year, I'd consider it, because I think this team has shown enough to me that with an additional guy down the middle of the lineup, they might be good enough to for sure. I mean, right now, if it looks like they're going to face Vegas in the first round, they certainly have proven that they can play with them. And, you know, I don't know that I'd look at it and say, hey, this is a club that's a center away from making a deep Stanley Cup run. But, you know, who knows? I mean, beat Vegas and see what happens. I mean, and I think they've done enough to warrant that my tune has changed a little bit on that, where I would at least be willing to consider a probably more of a deal than I would have 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree on that. It's going to be interesting, because they are really pressed up against the cap. And so, you know, they've really almost got to make dollar-for-dollar trades. So I don't think Glendening for a pick even works for Minnesota. But we'll see. Hey, this was a fun show, Anthony. Thanks, as always, for everybody tuning in and listening to Worst Seats in the House with Michael Russo and Anthony LaPanta. Thanks to our sponsors, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut water treatment, Minnesota Propane, Kowalski's, Chris Lindahl Real Estate, Profile by Sanford, and Bosch Law Firm. Talk to you next week, Anthony. So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never gonna win. Oh, but the world won't forgive a winner. So I skip the line and I go to these kiosks and I skip, like, honestly, I'm not kidding you, it had to be 500 people in line at 6 a.m.